Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Ready, set, pod. We are here to talk about the second episode of Series 11 of the Great British Bake Off Wrap Up podcast. So I am joined here with two wonderful people, one of which is Kurt Clark.
I'm one of the wonderful people?
Yes.
Wow, that's such a great piece of news to wake up to. I'm not used to hearing such praise. So thank you. No, it's good to be here. Biscuit week. Yay.
Yeah, biscuit week. Mm. And then we also have Jess Lees, who is filling in for Haley Strong this weekend because, Haley might be getting hitched. But Jess, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thanks very much. I saw this distress call out in the distance. It was like a blinking beacon inside a very janky lemon shortbread tower. And I thought, these people really need my help.
It was burned caramel on a stove wafting throughout with a giant smoke cloud. You just knew.
I just somehow knew. And I thought, I better step up. But congratulations, Haley. That's very exciting news.
Yes. And so Haley has put myself, Emily Fox, in a strange position of hosting for the first time ever. But we'll see how this goes today. I'm really excited to be talking about episode 2. As Kurt indicated, it is biscuit week, which is always a fun week where we learn more about the British biscuit, because every time I think I know about biscuits, I am corrected very quickly by the British fare that we are introduced to. So let's get started. How did we feel about, signature challenge is how we started out with 36 chocolate Florentines. Has anyone ever had a Florentine? Is it reminiscent of a Girl Scout cookie the way I thought it might be? Because that's pretty much my depth of knowledge of a Florentine.
Well, I'm gonna do the coach thing here. Mm-hmm. I have, but mm-hmm. in the UK, you don't get them here very
right.
much.
Yeah.
Like, pretty much what you do in the UK is you buy a thing of biscuits to send home with like many different kinds, and the Florentine is in there usually.
Got it. Okay. So it's almost like a box of chocolates, but it's biscuits.
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay.
You know, I've done I'm forgetting the big store in London.
Marks and Spencer?
No.
Harrods.
It'll come to me. This is not okay. great podcasting. I want to say it's like, if I've had a Florentine, it wasn't announced. Like, before you put that in your mouth, this is a Florentine, and it's Fortnum and Mason is what I was thinking.
Oh, okay. Sure. Yeah.
And cause I know they have like the big tins of biscuits, and I don't think I've had any, like, if I've had Florentines in the UK, it would have been from there most likely. But I don't think I've had, even like looking at, like, I thought I knew what they would be based on the description, but then as I saw what was made, which maybe not, like, I had never ate anything with a waistcoat on it. So I don't think I've ever had a Florentine.
Okay. All right.
Well, the waistcoat was kind of extra. But here's something I observed. I have observed this kind of shift in, because I mainlined all seasons of Great British Bake Off pretty much like immediately prior to everything in the world shutting down. And then I rewatched them all kind of back to back.
Comfort.
Back.
Yeah.
I would rather the worst thing in the world being Paul Hollywood telling me that my bread was too dense than everything else that's happening. But one thing I've observed in the recent seasons that have been dropping concurrently on Netflix is that they do a lot more explaining what things are for people that might not be British.
And so all of us.
Yes. So all three of us, we don't have an actual British person on here, which, you know, maybe we should work on that for our next diversity push. But Noel went off on this very long tangent about what is a biscuit versus what is what the Yankees would call a cookie. And then they explained in more detail what a Florentine is. So I appreciated that. I wonder if this is something you've noticed as well.
Well, I think we talked about how in the premiere episode of this particular series, like when it first dropped, it just kind of like, you know, jumped right in with the episode. But then when I rewatched it the next morning, there was a new opening with Matt Lucas, you know, acting as Boris Johnson.
Right.
And so I'm wondering if they, and maybe this is what you were getting at, Jess, is I'm wondering if they, for the, when it drops on Netflix, if they have like added some sort of pre-recorded section for it, at least the more recent seasons.
Well, here's the interesting thing, Kurt. I don't know if I should admit this because I don't want the copyright police coming after me, but I didn't watch the Netflix version this week. I was kind of in a hurry to get out the door. So I flew to England on Wednesday and watched it then.
I was wondering how you performed such witchcraft. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So it was there. So that was there anyway. Cause as I was watching that opening where he's explaining what a biscuit is and, you know, there was a specific call out to how it's different in the States. And, I was wondering if that, was this another thing where it was inserted just for us? But it sounds like it wasn't. It sounds like they're just at least acknowledging in the production that they have a large American viewing audience and they're just making sure things are clear. Okay. Yeah. Cause you've got the sweet biscuits, you've got the savory biscuits, you've got, So the chocolate Florentines look good. If out of the three sets of I think challenges, these are the ones I would have wanted to try. Like in terms of the generic description, not a big coconut fan.
I also feel like they're the ones I could have eaten too without much problem because of the egg thing. But a lot of mango choices.
Oh yeah,
mango. I was like, guys, I like mango too, but we got to reel it in a little bit. The nut comment from Prue.
Yes.
Certainly got a belly laugh out of me. I really appreciated that. I like it when everyone doesn't take themselves too seriously. There are moments in time where you do love like a stiff upper lip in these competitions, but also moments of being able to crack up at yourself, I think, are really appreciated, which is what makes this show so pleasant. But what stood out as maybe like the top for you guys and also something you would not be interested in trying at all, even if it ended up being you know, higher ranked than others?
Well, the thing that I really liked was the fact that nobody that put mango in their biscuit really nailed it. Like there was no good way to use the mango, and yet everybody thought it was a great idea. So like one of them, they try it and Paul is like, you really should have soaked this mango. The next person did soak their mango. He's like, this is so chewy. Why did you soak the mango? Right. I think the thing we learned here is just no mango whatsoever.
Yeah.
Do you think I just because I have several friends who have a mango allergy, I'm assuming that either Paul and Prue and probably to a lesser extent Noel and Matt, their food, they either have zero food allergies that would keep them from the show, or if there are food allergies, they'd be like, okay, you may be tempted to put mango in your Florentines, but just know you're not allowed to. Like, I'm wondering if the allergy or food specifics of the four folks are communicated to the
That's a really good question.
There just may not be any.
I would suspect there's not very many, but note there's a moment when Noel is walking by and he's like, well, I'm not going to try that. And usually he's kind of up in there. So I wonder if there was something that he couldn't have or if they've kind of cracked down on them being able to pick things off of the trays for COVID reasons.
I have an interesting sort of side story to that. So I went to a food allergy conference about a year and a half ago and they had like a celebrity panel come on. From like Food Network, sort of like Ming Tsai sat on it. one of the women who is on Chopped as a judge pretty consistently, and she, I'm blanking on her name right now. I'll look it up real quick. But she noted that she's allergic to hazelnuts and talked about like the sort of the limitations of having that and being on cooking shows and having to, you know, talk on camera and on air about a lot of this stuff. And one of the people in the audience was like, well, why wouldn't you say something on the TV show about it? Like, wouldn't that be a cool opportunity to be like, hey, I'm a person who lives with food allergies, but like, I'm still able to work in the food world and da 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 da. And she was like, a lot of the time it's up to the production team and the creative people behind the shows, and they're not necessarily interested in pushing that sort of agenda versus it being a quick, hyper competitive atmosphere where you're just eating stuff and judging, right? So I wonder if that, I mean, obviously we're speculating because we don't know for sure if anyone has a food allergy to begin with, but like, you know, it could also be an interesting tie-in. And if anyone was going to do it, I feel like Great British Bake Off would do it well versus being like, no, we're not talking about that like American TV shows do.
Well, they do one every week. Every season there's a week where they're like, okay, make a thing that's vegan, make a thing that's gluten-free.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So, Peter will nail that.
Yeah.
I think the null comment did strike me as odd. I didn't know if that was like reflective. I think what we'd heard that in the first week, Matt Lucas is like eating everything and he got terribly sick. And I didn't know if that was like I didn't know if that was a callback.
It's a rookie mistake.
Exactly. But looking back at like the ones that I would have tried, I think I would have liked to try these, you know, Peter's sticky toffee Florentines, just kind of like scanning what was in everything. It seemed like in terms of a chocolate Florentine, I would have wanted to stay pretty true to that flavor profile in terms of like nuts and chocolate.
Yeah.
Like even, you know, Mark had the dried mango in his, even though they're like the macadamia nuts in there. I think I would have also been interested. So I would have stayed away from some of the more fruit based ones. I was maybe just because of the name. I love the quarantine Florentines.
Yeah. I mean, you got to take advantage of that.
Yeah, not a coconut fan. That's the only thing. But I still would have given it a shot just because of the dark and white chocolate and the pistachios and almonds. So, it's I think I would have gravitated towards that more traditional profile. Although I had to Google, like, and I'm glad they went into a little bit more detail about it partway through. But the ruby chocolate, I'd never heard of that before.
I never had either, actually. And I kind of want to try it now because I like the idea of having like a little bit of sour or not sour necessarily, but a little kick to it. Yeah.
Yeah. They said, so I think they described it as like it has like a white chocolate, but more of like a little bit of a sour finish.
Yeah. Which is cool.
Do they like blend in like shit? Like I said, I looked it up. I didn't
blend in shit.
No. No, I was going to say cherries.
That's what made it sour.
Yeah. And I suppose like if I Googled hard enough or read more, I could have actually, that probably was like line two of the description. But yeah, it's something I would have been interested in trying. Cause I think I was, before they even brought up rose chocolate, I was like, oh, what is this pink chocolate that they're using?
Yeah. No, I've never
seen it. Is that how they make
strawberry
quick?
Oh God.
I'm pretty sure they don't make that in the UK.
They have a little bit more taste than we do.
Cross that off my emigration list.
Oh man.
We bought these cherry chips off the clearance rack recently, and they look just like chocolate chips, but they're bright red.
Okay.
And they taste like solid sugar with a hint of cherry on the top note. And that's what the ruby chocolate reminded me of, just on its face. But I'm pretty sure that you do not find anything that artificial in the UK.
Yeah, probably not. They have stricter protocol.
I did not know you could caramelize white chocolate. That was something I learned.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm not really a white chocolate kind of gal. Like, I don't seek it out. It's not something I'm ever like, oh, like, sign me up. The only thing I got close to was probably there was like a white chocolate cheesecake from the Cheesecake Factory when I could eat eggs, where I'd be like, yeah, I'm gonna knock that out no problem, because it had like raspberry in it, I think. Is that right?
That sounds right.
Yeah, that sounds right. White chocolate raspberry cheesecake. I'd be like, yeah, that's me. And that was only a specific amount of time before I end up very quickly afterwards finding out I was allergic to eggs. So nip that right in the bud. But like, other than that, Yeah, I've never, like, I always felt like whenever there was a white chocolate component to something, I'd be like, well, that's a little disappointing. But I don't know, maybe that's just me being a little bit of a jerk about white chocolate. It seemed to look pretty good on the Florentines. So, you know, maybe I should retry it. I'm going to retry it and probably be like, guys, I still feel the same way about white chocolate, but whatever.
I think it has to be a very specific kind of white chocolate.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I'm not going to just eat it for the sake of eating
it. Yeah, like a cop-out, like, white bunny chocolate from, like, Easter, where you're like, yeah.
Especially when it's October. Like, yes, don't do that.
No.
I think I remember, like, in my childhood having, like, there's like, a Hershey bar that was white chocolate, but with bits of Oreo cookie embedded in it.
I was thinking about that exact thing.
Like, a cookies and cream. I could get behind that. That sounds good to me.
It was never as good as I wanted it to be, though.
Oh, no. For sure not. Wasn't there, like, a white chocolate Kit Kat at some point?
Yep. Yeah, they still make that.
Yeah. Yeah. When Josh and I were in Japan, we bought a Kit Kat. I mean, they come in so many different flavors. They're like all the green teas and everything like that. And then there was one that glows in the dark, like a glow in the dark Kit Kat. Let me tell you.
You know what my first question is?
That didn't glow in the dark.
Okay. I know what you're going to ask.
Relax. This is a morning podcast, everybody.
Yeah.
All right.
So I liked that there was, it was interesting that the Florentine challenge in that there were a couple instances where the judges walked away from the baker's, the state station. And there's like, that was not a Florentine. And then they just walked away. I'm like, how was, like, you said that pretty much the exact same thing about this that you did the previously, but how would, like, I was still a little bit confused about the DNA of a Florentine in terms of, like, what did pass the approval test. I think the big thing I took away was it needs that snap.
I was just going to say the snap. Yeah.
The snap. But there were a couple things that didn't snap that weren't described as not Florentines. And so, I just missed that. But if it didn't snap, I knew it wasn't going to do good. That's one of the first things they were looking for.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's what they're always looking for in Biscuit Week.
Yeah.
Okay. Florentine, I think the key is, like, the caramel is not, like, squishy caramel. It's, like, hardened and all the stuff kind of binds it all together. But if it was just by itself, it would just shatter.
Yeah.
Right.
But they do kind of remind me, like, the non-snappy ones reminded me a lot of Samoas.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, right?
Yeah. Like, okay.
Yeah.
I will, you know, I will murder a box of smoke.
I know. Somehow we always end up with Girl Scout cookies every year from a couple of different friends who have kids that are of the right age now. And Josh just orders a ton of them to support, but then, like, hides them in places. And I'm like, wait a second, where'd that come from? What's that one? But I try to stay away from them just generally because I will murder. Like, that's exactly how I feel too. Anyway, but yeah, moving on, technical challenge. So Kurt, you just said you don't really like coconut. So you probably didn't feel so great about the 12 hand-shaped coconut macaroons we saw. And then the 6 drizzled filled with chocolate piped with mango curd.
Interesting. So I'm not a fan of coconut, but I do think it is more of it. Strangely, it's one of those things where I think it's more of a texture than a flavor.
Yeah. Like, I know a lot of people who don't like the texture of it, but like the flavor. Like, they'll drink a pina colada, but they won't go anywhere close to a coconut cake.
Yeah, I won't drink a pina colada because that implies that I would stop after one. Like, I would drink several pina coladas.
And, I love pina coladas.
But yeah, for some reason, it's like shredded coconut is what I can't do. And I don't know why that is. And so, but it's also like the macaroons I've had in the past have just been coconut. And so the insertion of the chunk of chocolate out inside and then the drizzle outside or the mango curd, I would try it. I just fear I would be kind of put off by it. I would have rather this had been a macaron challenge than a macaroon challenge.
Yeah.
And if anybody's watching British Bake Off for the first time, this might be the first time that they learned that there was a difference between the two.
Yeah.
That extra O makes a huge difference. My mom still, despite me having told my mom this like 5 different times, like, do you want to try this macaron? Because she's allergic to coconut. She's like, I can't, I'm allergic. I've told you several times. It's a very different, unless I got you a coconut macaron, which would be just horrible. That's like, you know, promising someone a chocolate chip cookie and giving them oatmeal raisin and just watching them be surprised.
That's the meanest thing you could possibly do to anybody.
You know, right? I went to it,
pretending to be chocolate. You could not ruin a friendship faster for me.
I went to a conference once in New York, and during the break, they had a bunch of cookies laid out, and I was fooled by the oatmeal raisins and think they were chocolate chip. And I stood by the table and let people know as they came up to it. And I had no less than 10 people say thank you and like walk away without grabbing a cookie.
You are an American hero, Kurt. You're doing the Lord's work.
I try. So yeah, I would have tried the macaroons. This challenge just didn't excite me. It was actually more the technical side of this that interests me, in terms of like, you have to like have the ring around there to hold the little thing of mango, or these are going to be thicker because they have the chocolate on the inside. So I was actually more interested in the technical aspects of making these two particular versions than I was interested in, that looks good, I want to try it.
Fair enough.
Yeah, they're kind of they're a B+ cookie.
Yeah.
In general, just like where you put them on the scale.
Yeah. Like if somebody baked them and brought them over, I would eat one. Mm-hmm. But if somebody gave me if we were at an event and there was a cookie tray and there were macaroons there, I would probably eat a different cookie.
That's like the celery on a crudité, where you're like, yes, last. Yeah. 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 Because you're going to, I mean, if you found out it had chocolate in the middle, I would be interested in the mango curd. If I could eat it, that would be intriguing to me because I do like mango, but yeah, it's fine. I felt okay about it. I think I agree with you, Kurt, in the technical part of it, and watching them kind of construct things and making sure that the coconut had the right consistency, wasn't too pulverized to like kind of mush together. But that being said, yeah, I felt like it was an okay technical challenge. I don't think it was too crazy. Right. Obviously, people had different bake times, which made me a little bit nervous, where I was like, getting too brown.
I'm going to put it in for 10 minutes. I'm going to put it in for 30 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. Like that people were wildly, you know, on a spectrum of timing for baking.
One thing I thought was really interesting, and this is kind of, this makes me feel like this is a horse I want to back. Like, I think he's going all the way.
Yes.
Dave looks right at the camera and he says, "There's a lot of time left, so I bet this is a very long bake." I thought, good observation, Dave. You're on top of it.
Yeah, I would say as a player, Dave really came out of the fire from last week. Like, I was impressed. He was like a phoenix rising from the ashes.
Yeah, he earned that star baker.
Yeah.
I did enjoy how when they were all taking their bakes up, Noel said, "Sarah, do you want maybe just like hold back for a second?"
I know. Poor Sarah. She continues to make me laugh really hard. She's excellent. I really love her as a contestant. I think, you know, we're starting to see people's personalities a little bit more too, which is fun. And especially, you know, as we're watching more intricate challenges, things that might have been a little bit more attainable than last week, like not a bust. But I don't know if we want to just jump to Showstopper and start picking apart some of those, because
I would love to, but I did have a couple of more things I wanted to point out. I was very intrigued by Mac admitting that he had drunk sweetened condensed milk directly out of the can.
I mean, I've had it before, but in like a Vietnamese coffee. Like, I wouldn't just like throw it back on its own. Yeah.
Yeah, that's not something you drink by itself. So that was interesting. I thought Rowan needed to stop repeatedly comparing his macaroons to his cat's digestive functions.
Yep.
That needed to not happen.
I forgot about that. So I'm really glad you just brought it up.
I'm sure we're going to have a lot to say about Rowan coming up. Yeah. But that needed to stop happening. And I wanted to throw a shout out to Noel in here, because he really does do this thing really well that I think. And, you know, I've watched the Mel and Sue era, and I watched the Noel and Sandy era, and now we're in the Noel and Matt era. But Noel does this amazing job of disarming people. Like, you really could not be nervous if he is looking over your shoulder at what you're doing. And you see Matt try to do it and struggle. And even, I would say, Prue and Paul, if they come over to your table and ask you a question, you're a little bit nervous. But Noel comes up and he's just like shooting the shit with you, and you kind of want to hang out with him. And I don't think any other person in that tent could have gotten away with saying that to Sura. Like, I think she would have broken down. But it's Noel, so.
True. Very true.
And I was actually impressed by Laura in this challenge. I know she got like fifth from the bottom, but like just going into it to where she was like, she's never made a macaroon. And she's like, and like the instructions are make mango curd. And she's like, No idea. And so given, I think, how unprepared and thrown off she seemed, for her to not land in the bottom, obviously, like, you know, the bottom four, she was in the bottom five, actually kind of impressed me about her. And then, you know, I do, again, just from a rules perspective, I was thinking about this the other week. There was, this is going to surprise nobody, but in high school, I was in Science Olympiad, and one of the events was called Write It, Do It, where one person's in a room with some sort of structure. The default would be Legos, but like once at the state level, you got Lincoln Logs or Tinkerfoot,
yeah,
or whatever. One person has this structure and has to write out, if you were given the component parts, how would you build this? And then the other person is then, you know, 45 minutes later, given that sheet of paper with the component parts and has to rebuild it. And the technical challenge reminds me a little bit of that, because like every so often you'd get an instruction like, you know, put the red piece on the blue piece. And the person in the other room didn't know that you were given like more pieces than you needed. And so part of the technical challenge reminds me of this Write It, Do It event. But that's why I like getting some of these insights into exactly how vague are the instructions. And Peter gives us it tells me to bake. That's great. Yeah. There's no time. There's no temperature. I do think the people who are putting in for 10 minutes, I actually like, my take on that was it was kind of a wait and see mode. Like, I'm going to put in 10 minutes. I'm going to see where things are versus just assuming I need to go for 30. I'm guessing the people who put in for 10 didn't only put it in for 10. But having watched series 5, and now I started watching the Beginnings collection, which I think is series 3. And I realized very quickly it's going to be hard for me to keep straight podcasting about the series and then watching a completely different series at the same time. So I cut that out. I'm going to wait. But it's like, they need to either make the stoves higher or give them some sort of like low stool to sit on, because the amount of time these people spend sitting on the floor in front of their stove, or, you know, maybe it works. Maybe we don't need anything. Maybe that's just part of the charm of the show. But I just love how much during these shows, people are just squatting on the floor, watching their oven. Completely appreciate that.
They need like little cow milking stools, like the little three-legged.
I feel like if I was going on the show, I'd wear a couple of extra pairs of underpants so I could just like sit with extra cushioning.
Yeah, fair enough. Or like a sit upon to really like bring home the whole Girl Scout theme that we sort of fell into. That was always like a really awful project. Do you know what those are at all, Clark? Kurt? Clark.
I answer to both, but the answer to both is still, yes. Nope, I don't.
Okay. So like you had like the stringy, like lanyard gimp or whatever it was called, and you'd like thread it together with a newspaper, and that was like a sit upon. So it'd be like, like a really weak pillow. I was like, where did this come from? Like war times is when Girl Scouts started. I don't know. Like, is that like,
what do you do with a sit upon? Well, I think it's for yourself. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I wish everything had that kind of descriptive term in its.
Yeah. I know. Yeah. The world would be a much easier and more literal place.
Yeah. I don't know. We're starting to get into Orwell territory here. So maybe
we are. Okay. Yeah. All right. Let's bring it back. Showstopper challenge. So, still some interesting sculpting going on. Not nearly as sort of free form as last week, but still room for error. Let's talk about this.
I don't remember in series 5 that it being, I guess maybe just across these two challenges, it seems a lot like a verisimilitude sort of thing, where it's like make something that looks real sort of challenge. I don't remember a lot of that in series 5. And I don't know, this still felt a little nailed it to me.
Yeah.
And I don't remember it. I have to go back and rewatch just some of the showstoppers. Like, I can't quite put into words why it feels different, but it feels very more arts and craftsy than previous, the one series I've watched had. And I don't know if this is normal from the more recent series, but I would love to hear your guys' thoughts on this.
Yeah. Well, the thing about the biscuit challenge is it really has gotten more and more complex as the series have ticked by. But I think the thing that made this one seem so nailed it is the fact that the biscuits had to be molded.
Yeah.
And in previous ones, I think one of the better biscuit challenges was where they had to make a 3D tableau based on like cutting out parts that you then like fitted into each other to stand up. That seems to be a much better tactic to take when you're doing Biscuit Week, because that has a little bit less room for error, and it's a little bit more technical. And I remember, and if I don't have the entire, I've seen every series that you can watch on Netflix, but I don't have them like memorized that way. I remember somebody.
How dare you come on this podcast? And
I know.
For beat.
I feel seen.
Yeah. If I'd had a little more time, I would have looked this up, but somebody 3D printed their molds for their Biscuit Week and then cut to fit this mold. It was all very precise and technical. And when you are molding your biscuits over a thing, that is a little bit harder to do. And I think that's what contributed to this one seeming so sloppy for so many people.
Yeah. Definitely.
I know in series 5, Lewis did this kind of St. George battling a dragon thing, or was exactly what you described in terms of he made kind of these two panels that interlocked. The people at home can't see me miming how things, what I mean by interlock.
For our $100,000 patrons, they can.
Yes. and that was the same thing, where it wasn't about gluing them together. It was about how do you kind of arrange it in these wedges so they just kind of slot together. But you're right. Yeah. The molding, especially around the kind of curved surfaces, are particularly difficult here. So I kind of appreciated Mac's attempt to like, I'm going to make these panels and then have the panels kind of fit together rather, but he was trying to do the glue approach again. So, it just didn't seem like there were any huge, oh my gosh, this is amazing successes.
Yeah, I agree. And if we really want to jump to the bottom of the barrel, just to get things rolling.
Just to get
Rowan, what are you doing, bud? Listen, I want to root for him. I want to be psyched for him. Got to edit it down. Got to pull it back. Also, the description where he was like, this is for my 90th like birthday.
Great aunt.
I was like, oh, no, this is not how you present this. Like, and Paul was just like, really? We're going to do this?
I thought that the directive to create a table setting based on a memorable meal, my notes say, is this a British thing? Because I can't tell you one single meal I've ever eaten in my life where I remember the decorations on the table. Like maybe at somebody's wedding sometime, there was a cool centerpiece. But this seems like, you know, what would I even do for this challenge? I don't know. I'd have to make something up. And I guess maybe half of these are made up. But I didn't understand it. And I thought, Rowan has the good ideas, but he has never once followed through on any good idea he has ever had. And I don't understand why he is still on the show.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's I have. Maybe it's the rule of threes. It's like I like still like, you know, and then with the next week being the third episode, maybe that's when we'll say goodbye to him. But I did like the straight faced conversation between Paul and Rowan. Is like, did you practice this before? Yep. Were you able to do it in enough time? Nope. You're still going to try it? Yep. Okay, Rowan.
Yeah. I mean, you got to give him some credit for the ambition, but like you can only do this so many times and know that you are limited in scope as to what you're able to execute. So maybe like pare it down a little bit. Like, come on, Rowan, read the room. And he can't, and like just with like the royal icing, and I was like, oh God, it looks awful. Like it's not something where like he, you know, I think I would feel better about it if he did like, even with his bust, actually, I was pretty impressed last week, considering how everyone else has turned out. But I think, and that's saying a lot. No, I think, you know, if the picture had Lighthouse had looked awesome and nothing else was done, I would have felt better about it. But instead, it kind of looked like you're in ceramics class when you're in eighth grade and trying to kill time and like looking at the boy you like more than doing the stuff, right? Like, it felt very camp art project, not so really put together. I liked the light part of it, but that's just a bell and whistle. That's not something he made out of biscuits. So I don't know.
I mean, there's, gosh, Rowan, there's something to be said about aiming high.
Yes.
But there's a different, but that's something that you do in your head. That's not what you tell other people.
Yeah.
It's like, he was like over promise, underdeliver and be okay with it. Whereas like you kind of need to like Paul was saying, you underpromise, overdeliver, and then only you know what your true vision was.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I was surprised he didn't go. And you know, we have some talking points to that Jess is going to bring up as kind of on that point in a bit. But I literally my jaw dropped when he was still sticking around.
Yeah, I
did not expect that. I'm enjoying having him as a personality.
He
on the
seems
screen.
Really delightful and like like a very nice person, but that doesn't mean he should be on the show.
But this is one of those things that happen on every reality show where there are judges instead of being voted out. You have people that are maybe not as equipped to be there, but they are strong personalities and they're bringing something to the show. And Rowan is definitely a character. Mm-hmm. Like his collection of 18th century hand embroidered waistcoats already ensures, like, as soon as he said that in his interview, you know, they're like, you are in the cast. Like that is.
Yeah.
He's definitely a character type that they love on Bake Off. But yeah. I think you have to still be bringing a little bit of something to the table regarding the things that you are being judged on. And I'm still waiting for that to happen from Rowan.
Although interestingly, Lottie did pretty well in this challenge. And again, she continues to be my personal crush on the show.
I was just going to say, you still think she's cute?
I think she's cute.
Oh, she's very cute.
She's so cute.
And especially like, knowing that she was like, I think last week they revealed she's into Viking metal. And then of course this week she does like the Viking longboats. And she was very concerned that she wasn't going to get done. And she actually, you know, voiced at the end of her presentation. It's like, it was, I think what saved me is the fact that they were able to see my vision and they appreciated that. How is that different from, is it just the fact that Rowan has now a official, like I wouldn't say Lottie has a track record of overpromising and underdelivering, but Rowan does, or it's not even, I don't remember if Paul or Prue had said, that's an awful lot. Are you going to be able to get that done in time, Lottie? Whereas they have warned Rowan. Maybe that's the difference. But
That's absolutely the difference because you hear Paul literally say to him, I don't know what we can do with you if you keep not listening to us.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm a parent of a 4-year-old. I understand this.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's one thing to have a slap on the wrist and be like, this was ambitious. We saw your vision, but like you weren't able to pull it off versus like, stop it.
it's gone from adorable to okay, this is getting in the way of and they're trying to like protect him from himself a little bit. I mean that's the wrong way to phrase that, but they're kind of saving him from like, you know, you can do stuff but learn to pivot earlier.
Yeah, like you need to adapt. And this is always a show where people adapt very well. Like they take the criticism to heart. They don't get upset by it and they just move on and improve. And if Rowan can't do that, why is he still on the show?
Correct.
Because I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Emily, because like on Top Chef, there's a lot of instances where they aren't given a chance to change the description of what it is that they were making in terms of.
It comes off that way for sure, I think. Yeah.
And I talked briefly on a previous podcast about the Australian show My Kitchen Rules, and that's an instance where, you know, they're hosting people in their own home for like a 3-course meal. The menus are sent out to the judges like ahead of time.
Yeah.
And so that's something where you can't pivot. But here it seems like they have this nice, you know, each presentation in the signature and the showstopper has this nice illustration to it. But I feel like that's done after the fact. But at the same time, lots of times if you hear Rowan talking about this lighthouse and this teapot, and that's not where he ends up, they kind of have to, I guess, illustrate what he was intending in the first place.
Yeah, his vision. Yeah.
Yeah. So, really quickly, this is a backtrack. I saw the Paul handshake during the signature challenge.
Yeah. Yeah. Bring that up. Was, oh my God.
I thought they were doing the handshake this year, but apparently you've all been in quarantine together. You can.
Yeah. He like PRL'd really hard beforehand. Yeah.
I thought it was going to be like the Hollywood fist bump this year.
But. Yeah.
Lottie got the handshake in the first challenge. And I was like, oh, that's what Haley and Emily meant by the Paul handshake. Mm-hmm. That, and it's, that is very purposeful and it does stand out. So
it does.
Noted. It
does. Yeah.
Noted. The person who gets the handshake almost never gets Star Baker, which I think it's kind of like, it's a thing that they do. They're like, we kind of already know that somebody else is probably going to get Star Baker this week, but we want to make sure that you know that this thing you did in this moment is pretty great.
Almost like reserve best.
Yeah. It's like a special recognition.
Yeah.
It's not quite immunity from going home, but it's potentially a good sign that you're safe. Because the fact that she got the handshake in the first round, and I think Lottie got fourth place in the technical challenge. I was like, she was going to really, that's why I wasn't too worried for her. It's like, no matter how badly she messed up her Viking longboats, I didn't think she was going to go home, especially
you have to
given
do it really badly.
Yeah.
Really badly.
Although so, Emily Fox, I have a food science question for you along the lines of the longboats. So,
let's see if I can do this.
A couple of different people, and Lottie in particular, put charcoal their dough. And mm-hmm. Is that something that you can do? Is that okay to eat? Because I know that they give people, you know, if somebody overdoses on drugs, they give them activated charcoal to absorb their medication. So if you eat
I have a bottle of activated charcoal next to my bedstand, so it's not even an ER condition.
Kurt, are you overdosing that regularly, Kurt?
No, it's funny. A couple years ago for Christmas, my aunt got me a couple things of vodka and then a thing of activated charcoal. So she's like, we find that this helps with hangovers really well. So
is this the same one who gave you the shot glasses? Kurt had 30 candy cane shot glasses, like edible candy cane shot glasses.
What? It's the same aunt. So. Gosh,
I want to get a present from her. I want to see what she gives me.
It's not the same aunt who is on MasterChef. So it all ties together. But I was thinking the same thing. There's a lot of dark black doughs in this, and some of it, and a lot of it was charcoal based. I was curious what that impact, not just on the flavor, but you'd think that, does that have it's part cookie, part briquette? Like, how does this end up?
I think would it absorb briquette? Yeah.
If you were eating, if you were taking medication, and you ate charcoal dough?
Would it bind it? Yeah.
Yeah, would it bind it?
I don't know, honestly. I don't think it's dangerous to have a little charcoal. Obviously, people take them as supplements.
Whether Kurt takes them as supplements.
I'm a person, Jess.
You take a quick shot out of your candy cane shot glass with whatever alcohol of choice. And then chase it with a charcoal little pill. I don't know. I certainly think it's probably better for you than putting a ton of food coloring in. I mean, there's so many processed things that end up going into this. Like, let's talk about last week with the bubble gum and cream soda stuff, right? Like, that had to have been made out of the craziest, artificial ingredients. So charcoal, as it stands, probably not terrible for you. Briquettes, I wouldn't suggest eating them.
No.
They have a cheese grater out that they're rubbing it. I'm sure there's food grade charcoal powder. There can be gold flakes that you could put into something.
Yeah, no, totally. It's like any of the, the elements that you could eat. But yeah, I think the reason a briquette is dangerous is usually it has lighter fluid in it.
Well, there's that too.
Yeah. So don't do that, guys.
We are not advocating the usage of dropping your briquettes into your batter.
No. But I've noticed it here and there, but I've never really thought about it too much. I've just expected it to be a coloring agent more than anything else. Mm-hmm. But it's used for other things too. So
I guess so.
Yeah, there we go.
And that was in the Ethiopian tea set, correct? Yeah. That was Mark's.
Yeah, Mark with a K.
Mark with a K. That was something. And I think I he's another one that I, despite him having huge nuts, I was really interested. His was one of the ones I would think I was most interested in. Like, I like the cinnamon coffee combo from a flavor perspective. I would have been curious how the charcoal impacted that. But it seemed like he was concerned about, is a coffee flavor going to go through? And if I'm remembering correctly, was this the reaction where it's like, oh, yeah, we know we can definitely taste the coffee.
Yeah, they were that's quite a bit. Going to be up all night. I thought that looked cool. But also, like Jess was saying earlier, I think a lot of these didn't look as professional as they could have. And
right. And did Laura build her three-tier cake stand? It sounded like they were saying that she actually used like a platter of a cake stand to put her stuff
on. I think that's what they were saying. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, Jess. What were
you saying? She at least had the center of the cake stand because you could see her like molding biscuits around it.
Right.
I was going to give a shout out to Linda, who I thought was going to be toast pretty early on. Yeah. And then she's the only one that came out with anything that looked professional.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I agree. And I was psyched to hear more about Linda's story, how she likes to have a pint with her husband in their shed at the end of a long day.
Shed looks amazing.
I was like, how do we do that? And my husband's just like, what are you talking about? I was like, what if you had a shed and I could go drink a beer in it? And he was like, this sounds very weird.
It was like, you live in an apartment.
Yeah, exactly. But I was like, doesn't that sound so delightful? And he's like, Emily, I don't drink. And I was like, cool.
Uncle has one of those, by the way. He has
really?
Like, in his yard, there is what looks like a shed, but he's like built a porch onto it. And then you go inside and it's a full bar. And he has he has a taxidermied bear in it. Like a full-size taxidermied bear in his bar.
Is it holding like a mug? Is it doing something adorable?
No, it's wearing a hat, though, I think.
Okay, good. That
How
works.
How big is this shed? Because it must be a pretty big bear.
It's a pretty big shed.
Okay.
It's like big enough to house a full bar with several stools and a bear.
And a patron who is a bear.
Could you sell Josh in a smoothie shed?
Oh, I might be able to talk him into that. Or a mocktail shed. He's been enjoying the mocktails lately. I just got him a book that's going to be coming soon about mocktails.
You could have like a whole like snack fridge with the different British snacks in it.
That's a great idea. I have to pick the best Florentine out of this, the best macaroons, and then the best biscuit table setting. Which, guys, I know that Dave won. I'm kind of interested more. I was like drawn more to Sura's. I thought that looked cool. Is that a hot take that no one's ready to pick up? Too hot for you?
Yeah.
Well, dead silence. Okay.
I think the feedback on that one was that it looked kind of rushed, and I definitely agreed on that.
Yes, but I agree.
I did like the idea of a chocolate truffle box.
Yeah,
I was on board with that. I thought she was very smart to make extra teacups in case some broke.
Yep.
Because then you get
cardamom tea.
Yep. You get Mac by contrast, who's like, oh, my spoon broke. I guess I'm not having spoons now.
Mm-hmm. Which would not fly at a... I know that he wasn't doing a British high tea. What Mac was doing the...
Indian chai service.
There you go. Which is... You know, I guess that's related. I was impressed by Mark's, like just in terms of like just how straightforward Mark with a C.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The coffee one. With toast.
Just like this is like everybody's like doing like this is a big elaborate, centerpiece for this when having people over. And he's like, this is just like what I would be sitting down as a single dad. This is my solo breakfast.
Yeah. Memorable like, meal. There you go.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, I liked that they also reminded me that has kind of this structural background. Let me now jump back to my notes really quick because I'm trying to remember how they had put it, that he works with wood and metal and he's kind of got some of that structural know-how there in terms of how things go together. Yeah, he's a builder. It was a little bit squishy, but I think the visual look of it, I was just like, for some reason, that drew me the most. I really like Dave's as well. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, I mean, Dave's looked great.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's Dave. You expect it. He's going to be one of those contestants that's like, he's never going to screw something up. So you kind of don't even need to pay attention to him.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So, but there were far more. I guess there was those that were complete disasters. Those are the really stood out. There was kind of a bunch in the middle middle of that bell curve that were like, eh.
How do we feel about a biscuit haggis?
Okay.
I thought that was just going to be a mess because haggis is not attractive.
No.
Like that's the whole thing about haggis. It just looks like a football on your plate. Oh. An American football.
Yeah.
To be fair, yes.
But then it's Peter, so it's not going to look like total crap.
Yeah.
But I was just like, what are you thinking, dude? I'm sure it's going to taste great, but why?
I was curious what that was going to taste like. Obviously, it wasn't going to taste like haggis. I get that. But I did kind of want to try that. But I was like, it's like, it didn't look, you know, in shape and form, it's not too different from a rectangular Battenberg. I mean, obviously, it's like you've got this rectangular block again. This time you're just not putting marzipan on it.
Yeah.
That was, I like that he did it. And I think he had like his had alcohol. Like I remember seeing the big bottle of scotch, and his was supposed to be the kind of a tribute to Scotland. So that was really fun and interesting. And although he, you know, I thought he stood out in a good way last episode, this episode, he was in the bottom four. That kind of was like, no, he was bottom two, I think, wasn't he?
Yeah.
So I was a little bit like he fell a little bit in the rankings.
But I'm wondering if he tried to employ the same technique as last week, where he's like, I'm bad at sculpture, so I'm just going to do something that's like pretty easy. And like a haggis could arguably, you know, it looks amorphous, but like sort of has a general shape. So it's like easy enough to kind of get away with making it look like this without someone walking over and being like, I don't think this looks like a haggis. Like, I think it was a pretty safe choice for him.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me of, I've always been fascinated, and this does relate, trust me, I've always been fascinated by the seven wonders of the ancient world, and how like the only one that's like still like in existence and complete and whole are the Great Pyramids of Giza. And then the point that the author made was, well, what would a ruined pyramid look like? Like, if it collapses, it's still going to look like roughly the same. So at least
true. This is true.
So I think that's kind of the approach he took with the haggis. Like, if the haggis was ruined, you know, what is that actually going to potentially, like, if it collapsed on itself? Well, you can't tell.
Yeah, that's true. I think overall everyone did what they could. I felt pretty bad for, how do I say her name? Ermine?
I say Ermine is what I go with. Ermine. I could be wrong.
Yeah, I feel like this wasn't a really particularly strong week for her. She just sort of like ended up having a lot of setbacks in certain, you know, specific challenges. So like that was kind of hard to watch because I felt bad.
I feel she didn't get a lot of airtime.
She didn't get a ton of airtime. No,
like I was taking notes on kind of what was being said about what each person was saying, or like and all that we really got from her during the showstopper challenge was, well, this is the showstopper. I have to pull out all the stops. And then there wasn't really a lot of time spent on her bake. So, but because of that, I was pretty sure she was going to be safe.
Like, yeah. It was tiny screw ups. It wasn't a big screw up.
Yeah.
And the fact we just didn't see much of her is like, it made me figure she'd stick around.
I mean, we've seen enough shows and read enough edits that we know she's going to be okay for a couple of episodes.
So,
and then once we see her front and center and we get like her whole backstory and we follow her through a whole bake, then it's like, oh, okay, now you're going.
Really ready to tear your heartstrings out. So we saw Dave, you know, come out on top, and then we unfortunately saw Mac having to bid adieu to all of us. His Indian chai service just was lacking in a lot of ways. And we kind of saw him having a bunch of issues with sort of, you know, glazing and frosting a lot of the biscuits and things just not fitting together really well. It felt pretty, pretty sloppy at times. So we had to say goodbye.
Surprising us all.
He came third in the technical. Yeah. Third. Yeah. And we've seen people win the technical and still go home. But the only thing that we really got as far as negative feedback on his showstopper was that he didn't mold his biscuits, which you need to meet the challenge. But it was also people that did mold their biscuits came up with something that looked a lot worse.
Right. So,
and are we just celebrating effort now? Like, what is this, kindergarten?
If everyone goes home with a participation trophy, I am done with this show. No,
there's one cake plate.
Exactly.
Jess, is this where you want to bring up the piece of information that you?
I'm just gonna sip some chai here.
Yeah, I'm not gonna comment. This is on Reddit, and you know that everything on Reddit is absolutely true.
With that framing,
yes. But I was poking around. There are two robust Reddit communities around this show, which is weird because there should really just be one canonical one. But prior to the release of this series, there was a guy who was posting in the community a little bit, and then he had a long Reddit history, and people kind of dug back in his Reddit history, and he makes a mention of, I was cast on a very popular reality series and tanked my appearance because I needed to go back and help my family out. And there is some speculation that all of the comments were immediately deleted as soon as the series dropped. And there is some speculation that this is Mac, and that the reason that Mac went home this week was because he needed to get back to his family's shop, and he kind of sabotaged himself so that he could be free to do that. And I'm not contributing to any of the veracity of this statement. I'm reporting on what I saw in the subreddit. So I don't know if that's true or not, but it would explain a little bit more. And the fact that this information was out there before the show aired contributes to it feeling a little more true, but it's also possible if you go home that early, you want to kind of get people thinking that there was another reason behind it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if he tanked, he didn't do a good job of tanking it. If he tanked, that's the thing.
No.
It's like if he tanked it, I don't think we'd be sitting here feeling that he was robbed or whatever, or that, you know, someone, that it was a wrong choice. If anything, I could see there being a case for, hey, it's like, I know I committed to this. My family is having, you know, troubles back home with the business.
Yeah. They would have aired it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it would have been, yeah, it doesn't ring true. I just feel like there's something that we didn't see that happened. I just don't know what it is.
But there's always people, like there was another occasion, and I'm sure Emily has probably seen this season, the one with Bingate in it. Mm-hmm. And this is something, Kurt, if
that's fine,
this is a good season to watch, because there's kind of the most controversial moment in Bake Off history. We had a contestant who ended up like trashing, because he's like, it's ruined, and he accused.
Oh yes, that was season five. That was when I watched. Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the one you were watching. Okay, so you've seen right?
Yeah.
And I'm going to have to spoil something for you if you haven't gotten there. But the contestant that is accused of taking his ice cream out of the freezer went home like 2 weeks later, citing health issues, and kind of self-eliminated. And it's the only time I can think of where somebody self-eliminated.
Right.
Yeah.
And they were discussing for the next week or two after that as well, because so-and-so went home due to illness. I'm putting the air quotes in that for those who can't see it, because I don't know. I feel like something's coming. And sure enough, there was like not that next episode, but the one after that was a non-elimination. But go ahead. Yeah. So that's kind of
the opposite of that. Like, she self-eliminated, and then people were speculating, oh, did they kick her off the show and then tell her to self-eliminate based on her health issues rather than kick her off for violating the rules?
Yeah.
It's like, well, why would you do that? It doesn't really make any sense. And people violate the rules on here all the time, and they're just kind of reprimanded for it. Like, she didn't intentionally sabotage it. They wouldn't have done that. But this is kind of the opposite of that, where somebody is claiming that a contestant self-eliminated, and they made it look like an above board elimination. And I feel like for a reason like that, he would have just said it on the show and withdrawn from the competition, and that would have been it.
Yeah. Especially given the fact that this is such a specific year in which this has been filmed.
Mm-hmm.
I think there would be a lot more sympathy towards him if it was something where it's like, things are crazy right now, I'm literally quarantined with all my castmates, versus them going back and forth each week, which is what the normal protocol is. I think there'd be a lot of people that would say, oh my gosh, yeah, go back. Your family is the most important. The fact that you would be, you know, seemingly away from them for 6 weeks straight versus like the 10 week back and forth or whatever it is, or the 8 week, I don't remember the exact, you know, timing, but the fact that that didn't come up as sort of the storyline for him is a little suspect. So, I don't know, maybe he's doing some damage control, or thought that he would put that out there to plant that seed for people so that they're not like, oh, you just screwed it up. You're not that great. I don't know.
Yeah, either thing is possible, but I sure feel like this is a very American way of looking at it too.
That's what I was going to say is I was wondering if the theorists are fans of U.S. reality TV or are you Americans themselves or like who, I'm curious of the people behind this theory as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the last, you know, like, I, to bring up a show that I'm the only person in the RHAP universe that watches it, but the previous season of Ink Master and the final season of Ink Master, sadly, there is a guy in the first episode, like they did one challenge and he got up and he said, yeah, this show isn't for me. I'm out. And he walked off.
No way. That's great, actually.
So it's pretty great. And I think we are more attuned to having someone self-eliminate than I think maybe Bake Off would be. And I think there's kind of a culture of keeping calm and carrying on and keeping the stiff upper lip. And for somebody to say, I need to leave the show because my family needs me. Sure, I think people would understand it, but is it in the spirit of the Great British Bake Off? I don't know.
No. Yeah, totally. Totally.
Especially, and again, to your point, Emily, this is like very different circumstances where he can't just, I'm going to go back to my family tonight and come back tomorrow. Like,
right.
Yeah. Just like, I'm only here on the weekends. I can still help out. They're here for the entire stretch.
Yeah.
And it sounds
like
it's still a week between bakes almost. Because I think Sura was talking about how, if not, maybe it's not a full week.
I think they're 2 days on, 2 days off.
Okay.
That's so much work.
We did learn that they do have a test kitchen that they can practice in. Because I know Sura was saying that she like has been practicing and just hadn't been nailing what she was trying to do. And
I'm sure that they had to implement something to that capacity because otherwise you're losing the entire tenor of the show for people not to be able to practice each week. Like I can't even imagine like some of the things they come in with that they're prepared to do versus technical challenges that are thrown at them. Mm-hmm. Like you have to have that under your belt and know exactly how to time it, all the different components that go into it. I don't think it would be something you can just do on the fly. Even the best bakers in the world need time to perfect every single thing that they do. And especially under those circumstances, you need to be able to practice. So I'm glad to know that they have test kitchens. That was a question that my dad brought up that I think I mentioned last week, because my dad's a huge fan of the show. And he was like, wait, they're all together? They're not able to go home? How's that going to work for practicing? So...
and that's the thing. That's the thing that makes this show different from most of the reality shows we watch, where almost everything we watch, they're like already in a bubble together.
Yeah.
Like
right.
Survivor, they're on an island. Big Brother, they're in the Big Brother house. Amazing Grace, they're all in one kind of cohort.
Yep.
Bachelor, they're all in the same hot tub.
Yep.
Right. And it's part of it's part of the American ethos of reality TV
totally.
To keep them all in an insular group to have the relationships develop. And British Bake Off, they're like, okay, we'll see you next week. Go home.
You have a life. Go home.
Yeah. Go back to your life.
And it's just like so nice, actually.
It's probably contributes to why they're so much nicer to each other on the show.
Well, that's one thing we were speculating last week is will it become more intense because they can't go home? Is it going to morph into more of an Americanized drama because they don't get these necessary breaks every week? Only time will tell.
Or will they just become much closer to each other?
I don't know. Yeah, exactly. Like in a very British and pleasant way.
It's like they're all at camp together.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, we haven't gotten any like sort of insights into like anybody great starting to grade on anybody. It's like you kind of like, and do they all have their own rooms? Are they, you know, bunking up like on Project Runway? They share different, you know, kind of like apartment suites. So I'm curious. Kind of
everyone's in a bunk bed.
Exactly. I'm curious. That is interesting. I'm curious how that is going to potentially evolve. And I'm going to be keeping my eye out for it. Did your parents have any hot takes on this episode?
I mean, they called me and were laughing from the first episode, but I haven't talked to them about the second episode yet. So I don't know what their takeaway was, but I have a feeling they're both going to be like, what the hell is Rowan doing? But that's all of our takes, I think, at this point.
It's not a terribly hot take.
No, it's like a pretty lukewarm take.
But Emily, it would be very in keeping with the Great British Bake Off if you had a segment where you called your parents at the end of every podcast.
Oh my God. That's a really good idea.
Put them on speakerphone.
All right. I'm going to record them. I'll record them separately after this and then we'll see what we can do. Because Every week I get some sort of like really great little like gem from them where my dad's like, you know, one time I did have a Battenberg and let me tell you about, I'm like, what, like where did that come from? So I'm sure that they would be a great addition for a small segment if we could make that work.
The foxhole.
I know. Oh, the foxhole. I like that. All right. Oh, yeah. That being said, let's segue into our final segment that we like to do. So Jess, we like to talk about what we've been eating lately. So if you want, I can give it off to Kurt first. You can kind of get a sense.
All right.
And then you can hop in afterwards and let us know what you've been munching on.
That sounds great.
Yeah. All right. Awesome.
And for me, it usually ends up like what I've been eating. And, you know, Emily and Haley will often steer into what they've made. And I've just not been in a mood to do any of my meal kits or to get too creative with my home cooking. I feel like I'm always looking at if I'm looking off to the side, it's like my stove is right there, which like is a visual cue for what I've done. After last week, I went to the I went grocery shopping right after we recorded the podcast last week, and I bought my first pineapple upside down cake. Last week's technical
challenge. How was it?
It's very good. I still have like a third of it left.
Good.
It didn't have the whip. It was a full cake with four pineapple rings around the top, to give you an idea of the size of it. No whipped cream. It looked like it was actually two layers of sponge with a layer of something in between. Quite good, actually. And then that was like that was the main highlight. It's been a lot of like, I started kind of make my own kind of like Italian deli sandwich using this really nice spinach Parmesan bread that I picked up at the grocery store. But then I had this like garlic spread I put on it and three kinds of like Italian meats and then like an olive oil, and vinegar and olive oil juices, and that's been very tasty.
But the big thing,
it was so good. I think I have enough fixins for one more. But my big thing is, I'm looking forward to today, is I found a local empanada place. I've not had any empanadas since I moved to LA from Chicago, and it's kind of a slightly Hawaiian themed empanada place. So they got like a Maui pineapple empanada and a Kailua pork empanada, but some of your basics. They've got like a chicken tikka one. They've got a grilled corn one, a mushroom one. So lots of variety. So I am looking forward to reporting back next week on what the empanada situation is in Shea Clark after this weekend.
Awesome.
That's largely it.
All right, Jess.
That sounds amazing. All right. Well, I can tell you about a couple of great things I've been eating lately, and also one thing that I'm looking forward like crazy to eating.
All right.
Well, the first thing is I'm going to talk for a second about the good news of the pellet grill.
Because
my stepfather recently invested in a pellet grill, ditched his smoker and ditched his regular grill, and consolidated these two into one appliance. And every piece of meat we have put in this thing has come out absolutely amazing. We did a brisket. We did a turkey breast. We did like crappy hamburger patties from the supermarket, and they were among the best hamburgers that we've ever had. And this thing, just everything it cooks, it kind of infuses a faint smoky flavor too. But the brisket, we cranked up the smokiness and got the perfect like smoke ring on it. And it is amazing. And we are delighted because my stepdad is now like super into using this thing. And so a few times a week, he'll cook something on the pellet grill.
You're greatly benefiting from it.
Yes. And we have, we're getting down to the bottom of our half beef that we bought in June. But we have a few choice pieces of meat left that we're going to put on it. And then last night we were at, we are on a road trip now, and we visited a friend who also has a pellet grill, and he cooked these gigantic steaks. Probably should have split one with my husband, but I did not. I ate the whole thing.
No apologies.
No.
Yep. And then we're at the tail end of the tomatoes that I've been growing all year. And, there's a tomato varietal called Big Rainbow, which is my new favorite. It's very sweet and it's pretty to look at, and they're enormous. And next year, I hope I have garden space somewhere so I can grow some more Big Rainbows. But I've been a big fan of those. And then the thing I'm looking forward to getting, because I have been in Montana for 6 months.
Wow.
And in Montana, in our small town in the middle of nowhere, it's a town of 9,000 people, biggest town for 100 miles in any direction. They do not have lox. Nobody even knows what lox is. And we are in a bigger town for the weekend, and there's a bagel place around the corner. and they have lox, and I'm going to get to have lox, and I'm so excited.
Yes.
Like I even tried to figure out, like, could I set the pellet grill to make my own lox and it doesn't get cold enough? So you can buy an attachment that will let you cold smoke things. And I might get to that point depending on how much longer we're stuck here, but I'm getting lox and I'm so excited.
That sounds so good.
My mouth is watering right now.
I know. Yeah. I haven't had lox in a really long time either. That might inspire me to go and get some much closer to home.
And they sell it on every street corner in Brooklyn.
Yeah. I mean, it's like a 10-minute walk to the place that I'd probably buy them from. But we have had a couple of bagel shops close down during all of this. So like it is one of those things that you're seeing where you're like, wait, where do I go to get the bagels now? Where do I go to get this? But I'm excited for you. I hope you enjoy the lox. It sounds like it's going to be amazing.
I can't wait.
So good. This week for me, I gave Josh and I the challenge of trying to eat vegetarian / pescatarian the whole week just to see if we could do it. I mean, I know we can do it, but I was like, you know, I feel like we've been we had like ribs last weekend, which were great, but I was like, let's kind of like do a bit of a detox. So I bought us a full, branzino that I roasted in the oven Thai style. So I had like fish sauce, lime juice, garlic, lemongrass, and some ginger on that, and a little bit of tamarind, and that was really good, with some broccoli on the side. And then I made a swordfish steak, which turned out really good, on a bed of, I had like cannellini beans that I literally made for the whole week and just lived off of, like... I soaked them on Monday, cooked them Monday evening, and then just like had that for lunch the whole week. Cause I was like, you could do this. You can eat beans every day. It's going to be fine. But I pureed them. I roasted them with vegetables. I did all sorts of fun things with them. So that was cool. That was good. But yeah, it was very veg forward. Last night we had some udon that I made, not the noodles itself, but all of the accoutrements that went with it, like a really good, like roasted shiitake mushrooms with it. And, a nice little block of tofu as a tofu salad. So I don't know. Tried to be a little light, a little fancy free today. We'll see where that goes. Josh ordered a marinara pizza. That was his extent of the contribution to eating lighter.
There's no meat.
Well, he was like, well, I ordered marinara, no cheese, because, you know, we're trying to eat lighter. And I was like, but that's not a fun pizza. And it was really good. I mean, it's a marinara pizza from this particular place that we get it from is delicious. It's got like a good pesto over it, like really good slivers of garlic. But either way, I was like, I mean, if you're going to get a pizza, we might as well get the cheese pizza. Like, let's just commit. But yeah, we've been eating some good stuff, trying to, you know, reverse some of the COVID-19 body weight that, you know, will sit here on different parts of you if you don't move around as much as I used to. So either way, it's been a good time. But guys, this has been a delight.
I've loved this.
So fun to talk.
Do we have any idea what the next week will be? Because I think I get the sense that the first weeks are often cake and biscuit so week.
Bread week next week.
Okay.
Yeah. I watched the Channel 4 version and they told us.
Okay. Oh, okay. All right. Bread week. So maybe I'll make some bread for it.
This is the week of the stuff that you most likely can eat, right, Emily?
I can usually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, for bread, yeah. I mean, there might be some enriched doughs that are like a, you know, more of like a challah type, which do end up having egg in it, but or like a brioche style. But a lot of the time, like they'll have other kinds of breads that are totally fine. But we'll see. I don't know. People love to put an egg wash on things, so it is what it is. I deal with it as it comes. I'm not eating it. I'm not judging it, so it's fine.
This might be the week to do. I've been saying I'm going to bake along with the technical challenge one of these weeks. I might do it this next week.
That's a good idea, too.
Did they publish the instructions online?
No, but if it's like, if it's Paul Hollywood saying, this comes from me, this is, I want you to bake this kind of bread, you can Google Paul Hollywood
bread,
whatever kind of bread. Yeah. And I've baked a couple of his breads, and they're surprisingly not as hard. I'm sure my crumb, I added too dense of a crumb and it was probably a little claggy, but I did okay. Like it was an edible bread. So I feel good if it's most certainly going to be his bread. So I'll just find out what it is and see how it turns out. And I will report back on my Instagram.
Amazing. Wonderful. All right. Cool. So speaking of Instagram, Jess, where can we follow you?
I'm on Instagram and Twitter at Haymaker Hattie.
Awesome. Perfect. Kurt?
I am on most of your major and some of your minor social media platforms at Kurt Clark with two C's.
Awesome. And I am Emily at Emilet on both Instagram and Twitter. And of course, Haley, who is not with us today because she is getting married, she is a married woman, is hstrong underscore on Twitter and Instagram. So great. I think we're going to, I don't know, what do we say? Pack up our Cuisinarts and go. Like, what is it again? Pack up our stand mixers and take off for the day. So thanks, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.